Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. I'm coming to you live from the state capitol on the first day of the 2012 legislative session, the 45-day session by our part-time legislators mandated by the Constitution. Legislators are gathering. It's a hive of activity, and we're going to be talking about all of the major issues. Education at the top of most of the agenda, economic development, transportation, the liquor laws, immigration. I'll ask legislators if they think there'll be any surprises, like Grandma was last time around, states' rights, health care, and the list goes on. Of course, budget issues at the top of the agenda. Looks like some good news, at least extra money coming in. What do we do with that money? We'll be talking in this hour with Brad D., House Majority Leader, and David Litvak, House Minority Leader. In the second period of the program, Senator Pete Knudsen, Senate Assistant Majority Whip, and Ross Romero, Senate Minority Leader. And we'll finish the program in the last segment with Governor Gary Herbert. You're certainly welcome to join this conversation if you would like as well. You can go to our website, upr.org, and send us an email. It'll come through to me. We'd love to get your comments on. We've been talking to some advocacy groups as well to get their comments, and we'll run those past the legislators. And we are joined at this point by House Minority Leader David Litvak. Welcome back to Access Utah.
It's great to be back. Good morning.
We appreciate you coming in, and we hope that we'll be joined shortly by House Majority Leader Brad D. Let me just ask you, in general, looking at the session as it's in prospects, what are the top issues, do you think?
Well, the most important thing we do every year is the budget. And in your lead-in, you mentioned that we're in a much better position than we have the last few years, where we have some increased revenues. But that actually sometimes makes it even a little bit more difficult than the previous years of budget cuts. And so, but it will allow us to meet some of the critical needs that are out there. And so that will always be and is the biggest issue that we deal with. Education is by and far as important as the budget, and obviously has a lot of ramifications on the budget. But I expect a lot of legislative ideas. House Democrats and Senate Democrats are definitely prioritizing education, how we can give teachers the tools that all of our students can succeed with. And as well as find ways to fund education. I don't think any of us are proud of the fact that we're near the bottom in per pupil spending, and we know some of the unique characteristics of Utah and Utah's population, but that's not an excuse. Education will be a critical issue. Economic development is one of those things, and Representative D's upset because I'm getting free airtime. Here he comes. Economic development is something that, again, just like education and the budget, is a bipartisan issue. We all care about it. We know that's how we will be able to fund education and fund the other critical needs is through economic development, and so I think you'll see the legislature focus quite a bit on that. And then one issue I know for the Democrats that we're looking closely at is some of the DABC issues, Department of Alcohol and Beverage Control, and some of the liquor reform, which tends to be a pretty big issue around here. And so anticipate spending a lot of time discussing that issue as well.
We'll bring in Representative Brad D. now, who is the House Majority Leader. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate you taking time. We've just heard Representative Litvak, from the point of view of the Democrats, tell us that he believes education, economic issues, and the liquor issues, DABC, are the top issues. Do you agree with that characterization?
Yes. I think those will be some major issues. Obviously, we'll look at a lot of different things throughout the legislative year, but I think we have agreed, and I think we're in agreement all the way across the board, even with the governor, that education is probably going to be paramount this year in this year's session. In fact, I've said, you know, we need to quit being adversaries and start being partners with our education community, and we need to understand that we need to do what's best for the children and lay our agendas aside. Hopefully, we can do that, and working very, very closely with the education committee. When I say education community, I mean also higher education, because that is obviously, when we talk about economic development and drivers for economic development, the higher education is the driver for economic development in Utah, and we need to be more focused on the higher education system in order to drive those businesses and drive those workforces that are looking for those businesses.
Let me see if there are differences in terms of spending. I suspect there might be in terms of priorities, at least in terms of dollars. I'm reading, Representative Litvak, that the Democrats are proposing an increase of $500 million in education. The governor's budget had some $40 million. There's a big gap between those two figures.
Well, and not necessarily equatable in terms of the two. The $40 million figure is just enrollment growth, just in terms of trying to keep us whole over this last year. The House and Senate Democrats do have a plan to target $500 million over, I believe, I want to say 10 years. And so it's not something this year, but it's something looking forward. I think one of the criticisms that we have had as Democrats is the lack of long-term funding vision. Well, it's one thing to criticize, but if you're not willing to do the work and come up with your own ideas or come up with some concepts to get you there, then don't bring it to the table. And so we have a responsibility that if we want to see something done, then we better come forward with some proposals. And so there are some proposals, and this is one of them.
Well, tell me in brief, what are some of the specific proposals?
Part of it is kind of building off of an idea that was used last year in terms of setting aside some of future sales tax revenue growth for future funding of education, property tax, and putting a property tax freeze there as well. So some of the bill is actually not quite out there yet. Some of these ideas are still being worked through. Senator McAdams has really been taking the lead on it, and so we anticipate hopefully a very robust discussion and debate on it this coming session.
Representative Dee, are there areas of agreement? I'm guessing there might be disagreements on the in terms of the number of funds to put into education, but some of these proposals put forth by the Democrats, will Republicans go for some of those?
Well, I think we'll have to see. I mean, we haven't seen the bill yet. I will say there is complete agreement in the fact that we're moving the education agenda forward. The governor said he wanted $40 million for growth. Well, we not only agree with $40 million for growth, we think there ought to be more. We ought to do some innovative things to help education in the next few years. Haven't looked at the Democratic plan, but I know that we all have to set priorities. It's tough to set priorities for 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road when you're talking about the entire gamut of state services, transportation, higher education, economic development. So I think you'd find the Republican caucus very favorable in working towards those areas of education where we can help education not only now but into the future. But at the same time, our caucus is not in favor of raising taxes to do that. So what that means is we have to adjust our priorities on where we're going to be. And when you start adjusting those priorities and you've got $150 million eaten in the Medicaid budget already, your income taxes are going to education already, that leaves a finite amount to decide where else it goes without actually raising tax rates or doing those things. So we're looking at those.
And if I could just clarify, I mean, for the House Democrats, because oftentimes we talk about education and its connection to income tax, the proposal that you'll see is done without raising taxes. That's important. I think, again, that's one of those bipartisan issues. You know, we as a state, we as individuals and families are all still recovering from the downturn and the recession, and so this is not about raising taxes. There are things that we can do that will allow us to reprioritize the income tax back into education, particularly K-12. Some of the things that we have done in terms of changes in the Constitution has siphoned some of the funding away from K-12, as well as maybe starting to look at how we phase out some of the income tax exemptions that have been around that have kind of lost some of their benefits, some of their use, some of their need to reprioritize that funding. So this will be done without raising taxes.
Mm. I want to move on to some other issues, but one more on education. Representative Dee, looking at a proposed plan by Senator McAdams, looks like he'd want to dedicate 30% of new sales tax revenue to public education. I don't know how favorably that would be looked upon by the Republicans.
Well, I'd love to do that in a perfect world. If there were no other sources competing for that increase in sales tax revenues. But as we weigh that as a legislature, and I think we'll be fair and honest in how we do that, education becomes a major priority, and we'll weigh that in the equation. But there's so many other things that we're have to be looking at the same time.
Mm. Let me have you talk about first with Representative Litvak with this. Of course, there's been a scandal, the Division of Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control, you could call it that, and there's concern, I think, among many parties to force some reform. The Democrats appear to be proposing privatizing the ABC. Is that what you're proposing?
No, no. Senator, it should not be a secret, Senator Romero and I, a few months ago, actually went out to the community, particularly the business community, to seek their help and their guidance in terms of what are some of the reforms that we need with regards to DABC, whether we look at the scandal or even we look, you know, a liquor store closing a few blocks from where I live that didn't need to close, that decisions, poor decisions were made on a fiscal level at DABC where funds were used inappropriately. And if those funds were used the right way, then maybe we wouldn't have to close that liquor store. And so Senator Romero and I went out to the business community and asked their recommendations. These are individuals who, some that are regulated by DABC, some that are not. And so it's not, we can't just put this conversation about DABC and liquor reform in a nice little box that is privatized or don't privatize. That's a very narrow conversation. This is one looking at it from a governance standpoint, and how does DABC do their job effectively, and what's the structure that needs to be there for DABC to do this job effectively. And when we talk about economic development, there is no industry, restaurants, clubs, bars, that we overregulate that such as these. We make it so difficult for them to be in business and to survive. We should be doing the opposite. We shouldn't be. Now, of course, there's public safety concerns, but you know what? Bars, clubs, restaurants, they don't support drinking and driving. They want to help solve that. They want to be partners in that. They don't support underage consumption. They want to be partners, help solve that. They're partners. Let's bring them to the table. And that's what Senator Romero and I did in going out to the community and getting their recommendations. And we should have some recommendations back by the beginning of this week.
We'll look for those. Representative Dee, what's your view of what should be done?
Well, I think the audit pointed out some major deficiencies within the system itself, and I think that's what the legislature will be addressing at this particular time. Do you look at privatization? Do you look at a hybrid of that? Do you just fix the things that were in the audit? That's what we still need to discuss. One point I need to make is it's interesting, and you need the input of that business out there, all the clubs, all the whatever, the clientele that we're working with. But it's also important to understand the temperature of the constituency and what the people in Utah want to see done with alcohol and how they feel about how it's dispersed, how it's delivered. Those are pretty important issues that we need to have our ear to the ground on.
If you just joined us, we are coming to you live from the state capitol, the first day of the legislative session for 2012, and we're talking in this part of the program with Representative Brad Dee, who's House Majority Leader, and Representative David Litvak, House Minority Leader. Later, we'll be joined by Senator Pete Knudsen, Senate Assistant Majority Whip, and Senator Ross Romero, Senate Minority Leader, and we'll be joined by the Governor, the last segment of the program. You're welcome to join our conversation. You can go to our website, upr.org, and get an email through to us. You could also tweet us, and we'll get that here as well through the social media. Let me go to another topic that is jobs, the economy. You both listed that as tops in your caucuses. I spoke earlier with Stephen Cruz, president of the Utah Foundation. He underscored that. He said that the surveys they've been doing with people, voter surveys, that is tops along with education. Let me start with Representative Brad Dee on this. What can be done at the legislative level to help with the economy, with jobs?
Well, we're rated as one of the top business-friendly, the top business-friendly state in the union, and that's not by accident, because we work hard to facilitate the need for businesses. That we have to look at in the area of business taxes, corporate taxes, all those particular things, incentives that we might be offering. We have something in Utah called the post incentive, which means we don't incentivize companies before they come. We incentivize companies after they come, after they deliver the product, and after they deliver the jobs. And unlike other states that are wishing for them to come and giving money to have them come, we have companies that are coming. Let me give you one example, ATK. ATK had to write close to a $25 million check to another state to pay off what they'd already been given in incentive just to come to Utah. And what have we given to them? Nothing yet. But they know that we are a business-friendly state, and in the next few years, that we will be working with them to build a number of employees, up to 800 to 1,000 new employees in the state of Utah, because we're business friendly. We know how to do that. They chose Utah. There are companies all over this United States, specifically in the area of California, addressing some companies out of California just recently, that are looking for business friendly environments, and Utah is at the top of their list, and we want to keep it that way.
Mm. I spoke with Russ Van Tassel, Utah Taxpayers Association, as well recently. He underscored that with education, that education is the driver here. His perspective was accountability, that we need to see student results out of our education. I'm guessing you would agree that education is an important component here with jobs.
Well, as I said before, higher education, I think, is the major driver of the next few years of economic development in Utah. K through 12 is the major driver of the workforce in Utah. Talking to heads of companies, when they talk about why they're coming to Utah, it isn't the weather. It's because we have people that give them a day's work for a day's pay. They're very excited about our education and what's happening with those people in Utah. So it becomes the workforce that they're coming to Utah for. And I think that says much about Utah.
Representative Litvak, I'd like to get your view on what are the main drivers with creating jobs and the economy. What should the legislature do with the upgrade?
We do a lot of things right. I think Representative D touched on some of the things that we do right when we award businesses once they've delivered. So we have some results, and we're holding our businesses, new businesses and current businesses accountable before we incentivize, before we give that incentive. That's critical. But it all comes back to education. That's the top priority. That's what we can do. It's K through 12. It's higher ed. By 2020, we need, studies have shown that we need 66% of our population with some sort of secondary education, whether that's traditional bachelor's degrees, associate's degrees, professional degrees, career training. We have a long way to go. I think there are a lot of things that we do in the state that tell businesses that we're business friendly. The one area that we're continuing to lack is in education. When a company looks and they see that we're 51st in funding, that's not positive. That's not good. When they look and they see surveys, studies that show that we're 43rd among states in terms of quality of education, that's not good. Accountability is critical. We would all agree. We have a responsibility to be accountable for how taxpayer dollars are used, but we have to provide our educators with adequate tools. When you have a class size of 30, 35 students in second or third grade, let's be fair. What level of accountability can we truly have when you're asking a teacher to do his or her best in that sort of circumstance? We have to, as a legislature, do a better job of creating an environment that is conducive to learning, that we will have that success. That, to me, is the top priority when it comes to economic development.
Back to education, the Democrats' plan is a long-term plan, a several-year plan, as you have said. Can this be done? Can you reach the goals that you want to achieve in education if there isn't that long-term commitment?
I don't believe so. We've seen what the last couple of years have done. As much as we as a legislative body have prioritized education and try to minimize the cuts as much as possible, there has been cuts, and we're seeing the ramifications of those. And so we still have some ground to make up there. We know what student growth is projected over the years. So it's the opportune time to plan. It's the opportune time to have vision. My thing with education and funding, it's not just about throwing more dollars. Dollars are what support what we want. We want an education system where all students can succeed. That's our goal. And we need to have the resources to support that goal. It's not just about money and funding. It's about reaching that goal, 66% by 2020. Okay? It starts with K through 12. If we have the type of dropout rates we do now among some of our population, that's going to hurt us economically. That is our future workforce. So it's not just more money for public education. It's about reaching that goal of student success, all students succeed. And that's what we have to support.
Representative D, I want to follow up with this. I believe I heard you say that the Republicans aren't ready to commit to a several-year a several-year plan? You want to take it year by year? Do you think that is...
No, actually, we are willing to commit.
Okay.
What I said is the fact that we have to look at that plan as it compares to what other needs we might have in the years to come. I think it's important to point out that Utah rates among the very top, if not the very top of the states that spend a percentage of the budget for education. It's not like we're not spending money for education. It's how much of our budget can we afford to spend for education, and we're very tops in that particular area. Will we continue to do so? Yes, but we have to have innovation in education, and I think we're working across the aisle to achieve that right now. I think we're doing education totally different than we did 10 years ago in the state of Utah, and I think you'll see it different in the next 5 to 10 years as we move along. Funding will be a major source of that. How we weigh that funding and what we do, that will also be a major concern for us. But yeah, we have a long-term look at education, where we're going, and a long-term plan. And it's all positive and good. And we've shown that in the past, and we'll continue to show that in the future.
I've been reading some estimates that if you look at a surplus, $400 million, which is good news after several years. Some are estimating that half of that maybe gets taken up with social services and education increases. I don't know, your best guess?
Now, probably a little bit more than half of that will be taken up in the Medicaid, mm-hmm. as well as the need for educational in the area of growth. I said that the governor has included about $40 million in his budget for growth, and I said we've agreed with that, we'd like to do more. Mm-hmm. So if you take that $40 million and you add it to $130, $40, $50 million in Medicaid, depending on what the eligibility rates are at the particular time, then you eat that money up very, very, very quickly. We also want to pay down debt. We'd like to not bond for so many things that we're billing, pay cash for those things, put more money in our savings account, the rainy day fund. You weigh all those things together at the same time with a commitment from us that we're not going to raise taxes this year at all. Then that $400 million gets eaten up pretty quickly. But, yeah, the major importance will be education and social service, Medicaid, things like that.
Finally, with our representatives, Representative Litvak said before you came in, and this is probably maybe a view not just held by you, Representative Litvak, that in years where you have a surplus versus when you maybe have a deficit or, you know, lack of additional funding, that might lead to more contention, more contentious legislature. Hard to imagine a session more contentious than last year, but I can see the logic. You know, if everybody knows you have no money, then maybe you all agree that let's just cut some things. But if you have surplus, then you argue over where the surplus should go. I wonder if you agree with that characterization.
Well, in many cases, yes. Let me just stress one point I think we need to make perfectly clear. All government is local, and in Utah it's no different. You know, I work very well, and I think Republicans work extremely well with our counterparts across the aisle, the Democratic Party. And in the House and in the Senate, I think you'll find working together on these issues. This is not a national government. This is a local government. We do it right in Utah. And we work extremely close together in these areas. So I think you'll find a lot of people coming together in those areas that you're talking about, saying, yes, this is what we want to do. It shouldn't be contentious unless you get to a couple of issues that are, you know.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll be talking about a couple of those,
yeah,
as we bring in our senators. Finally, with you, Representative Litvak, as you look at, do you? I guess the opening day of the legislature, you always share that hope that they'll be able to clasp hands across the aisle and get some things done. Do you share that hope?
Oh, absolutely. That's been my experience. This is my fourth year as a Democratic leader, and have enjoyed a tremendous working relationship with my colleagues across the aisle. We have to. I think one of the frustrations that a lot of our constituents have that I share, I would guess that my counterpart Representative D shares, that when we look at what's happening nationally in politics, is everyone's stuck and just worried about fighting, and that doesn't solve the problems. We have real issues. What I mean by more contentious budget is, you know, what I've noticed over the years is when we face those really difficult decisions in a bipartisan way, we hunker down and we come together with decisions. And that's going to happen too here, but we're also going to be peppered with more and more demands and more. And so it makes some of those choices difficult. But we experience a great deal of bipartisanship, and that's because it's a two-way street. On the one hand, we feel that we have an open-door policy with our colleagues, the majority party. They want to hear our ideas. They seek our input. But on the same side, you know, we're not going to sit back as the minority party and let the majority party come up with ideas and solutions and then throw rocks at it, which is what we're experiencing nationally. That doesn't benefit anyone. That doesn't help anyone. That's not what I'm up here to do. That's not what Representative Dee is up here to do. We're here because we believe strongly in public service, but we want to meet the needs that are out there in our community. We want Utah, we want our community to be better at the end of this 45 days.
Very good. Well, in that segment, we've been talking with Representative Brad Dee, House Majority Leader. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. It's very busy, I'm sure, on the first day of the session. Representative David Litvak, House Minority Leader, has been with us as well. You shook your head, not as busy on the first day?
That was a little bit facetious.
Okay.
Right now, we're extremely busy.
Yes, I would imagine. Well, we appreciate you both coming in.
Thank you.
After a break, we'll be talking with Senator Pete Knudsen, Senate Assistant Majority Whip, and with Senator Ross Romero, Senate Minority Leader. Later in the program, Governor Gary Herbert will join us. And as we go to break, I've been talking with representatives from several advocacy groups, talked to representatives from Utah Taxpayers Association and Crossroads Urban Center. You heard those earlier this morning. Up next, Stephen Cruz, president of the Utah Foundation. Here's what he had to say about legislative priorities.
Well, we'll be focusing on a number of things in this whole election year. This is a really exciting election year with a lot of change coming. And every major election year, we do something called our Utah Priorities Project, where we survey voters to find out what issues are on their minds, and we challenge the candidates to focus on those issues. And some of these issues are issues that the legislature, of course, will be paying attention to because they're issues that keep coming up year after year. And they include things like K-12 education, improving the quality of education, as well as providing adequate funding, includes higher education, government spending and taxes, energy issues, the environment. But the biggest one really is the economy. Jobs in the economy is the biggest thing on the minds of voters. And so, you know, we'll be watching what the legislature is doing related to jobs and trying to spur economic growth.
It's early, but there are some pieces of legislation being talked about already. Are there any specific pieces of legislation that you're focused on, especially with the jobs and the economy?
Well, we don't lobby on any bills, so we don't get too active in following specific pieces of legislation, but we will be watching for ideas to improve education, especially since there's a new effort by the business community here called Prosperity 2020 that is pressing for some additional investments in education that are targeted to specific areas. And I've been part of a group of advisors helping the chamber and others involved in Prosperity 2020. And so we'll be keeping an eye on those, which includes some bills related to early childhood education, some higher ed issues, and some general funding concerns for education. And it looks like that group has gotten the governor on board with some of his proposals for education, funding the growth in schools for the first time in a number of years, and things like that.
Very good. Stephen Cruz, president of Utah Foundation, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Support for coverage of the Utah Legislature comes from the USU Charter Credit Union, serving members with online bill payer and web teller services for around-the-clock account access. Information is at usuccu.org.
Thanks for staying with us for Access Utah, and we're coming to you live from the state capitol. It's the opening day of the legislative session, first of the 45 days mandated by the Constitution. Our lawmakers are gathering. It's a hive of activity here, and we're pleased to bring in now senators, Senator Pete Knudsen, Senate Assistant Majority Whip. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
Appreciate you taking the time. Senator Ross Romero, Senate Minority Leader. Thanks.
You bet. Happy to be here.
Appreciate you being with us. By the way, your questions and comments are welcome at our website. You can email us, upr.org is that website, upr.org. Later in the hour, we'll have Governor Gary Herbert join us. First of all, Senator Romero, this will be your last session, at least for a while.
That's right. Yes, we went through redistricting over the course of the summer, and as a result of redistricting, there were some combinations of districts, and in fact, I was combined with Senator Pat Jones. So I've taken the opportunity to look for county mayor as a way to continue to serve, and so I'm pursuing that.
Can you confirm or deny speculations there's a rift in the Democratic caucus between you and Senator McAdams, who will apparently be running against each other for county mayor?
Well, yeah, I read that in the paper this morning. I guess I wouldn't say there's a rift. Clearly, both of us have an interest in serving. As a result of redistricting, you know, don't have the ability to come back to the Senate, and Senator McAdams does. And so, you know, both on length of service and connections to the community and other things, I think that I'll be able to distinguish myself from Senator McAdams. But obviously, he's got a lot of good potential, and I think we'll be fine coming together ultimately, working on the issues on behalf of the people.
Mm. We turn to Senator Knutson. It looks like good news for a change in terms of the budget.
Yes.
It's a little bit of extra money coming in, some $12.9 billion, $400 million perhaps in a surplus. Where do you see the Republicans coming down on how we should spend that? I heard from Representative Dee that Republicans, at least on the House side, do not want to raise taxes. We're hearing, of course, I spoke with Royce Van Tass of Utah Taxpayers Association. Predictably, he said he'd like to have taxes lowered. Where do you see the Republicans coming in?
Well, I think I could agree with Representative Dee. I see no driving interest in wanting to raise taxes. You know, our economy is still fragile, and to impose a new tax on our citizens would be foolish, and I certainly wouldn't support any tax increases at all.
Senator Romero, it looks like the Democrats have unified, have a plan for education. And I'm hearing from Democrats and Republicans too, that education is the key driver in terms of the economy. That's the top priority, is it?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, we have invested a lot in our roads and in transportation over the last few years, and of course we're happy to have been able to do that. Some of it we've done through bonding. I think now's the time to really, you know, shift our priorities, invest those additional dollars into public education and higher education, which the governor's budget doesn't really take up quite as strongly. And obviously, you know, wean ourselves off of the borrowing effort that has been bonding. Let's pay down some of those debts. Let's invest more in education and watch our economy grow.
We did cover some of the economic and education issues in the first part of the program. I'd like to move over to a couple of hot-button issues from last session. Senator Knutson, immigration, of course, was a very hot topic last time around, and there have been some proposed bills already with immigration. One from Representative Herod that would modify House Bill 116, the guest worker program. I wonder how, at least speaking on the Senate side with the Republicans, would that meet with favor?
Well, I have to be honest with you. We have not even considered what Senator or Representative Herod is doing, so I really can't speak to that. I think the legislation we passed last session has merit, and I would hope that we don't change a lot of things.
Senator Romero, what about on the Democratic side?
My guess is that there will more likely be support for efforts to modify the Bill 116. I think that you know, repealing it doesn't seem to resonate right now with people. I'd also say that, you know, the tension we had over immigration has largely subsided also, because on a national scale there have been efforts by those that were here to work to move on. You know, when the economy slows down and there are no jobs, there's no ability for these individuals who might have been here to work to find employment. And so they obviously move to where there are jobs, and that's the nature of the migratory efforts. And so I think we're seeing some of this is an out-migration back to countries of origin. I think some of this is just an out-migration maybe to other states where there might have been more opportunity. I think, obviously, this is a federal issue, though, and we really do need to keep the pressure on our federal delegation to take this up in earnest and find a solution.
It appears to be another bill that would be proposed by Representative Sandstrom, which would get tough on businesses who do not use E-Verify to make sure that their employees are in the country legally. Do you think that's going to find support?
I guess I would say I hope not. And by that I just mean, look, there has been a proposal for E-Verify at the federal level for a number of years. And there hasn't been consensus around it, partly because there's a lot of false positives on these. If you think about how many people are employed and how many, let me just give you, for instance, in the workforce, women. Women change their name frequently as they get married and take their spouse's name. Well, if they don't modify that with the Social Security Department, that will come out as a false positive. So that will mean additional burden on the employer. It will mean additional regulation. It will mean, obviously, delay of employment for the U.S. domestic worker. And if we're really trying to get at a few number of individuals and you burden the rest of us, I have to wonder whether that's really good policy, especially in this environment where we do see so much out-migration. So I think that there are other things we can do, and I don't think that it's quite ready for a national E-Verify. That's why the feds haven't done it, and when we're there, I think the feds will take it up.
Senator Knutson,
yes.
My recollection from last session, might be totally wrong, but seemed to be more of the agitation for immigration change, reform, it was coming from the House. There's a little less appetite for that in the Senate. I don't know if that will be the same case going forward. Do you detect any appetite among your caucus to take this issue up at all? Is there anything they would like to do?
I'm sorry. As I stated earlier, we really haven't in our caucus discussed immigration. I think we felt comfortable, at least at this point in time, with the legislation that was passed last session. As far as E-Verify goes, I might just make comment that I think personally that it has merit, but I think Senator Romero raises some very good points, and I think we need to look at those.
Let me ask you about what I think was the flashpoint of last legislative session, which was grandma. And I know some legislators felt blindsided by that. A huge public outcry. There is a organization now of media outlets that's going to do something they call, if I could read this here, Grandma Watch Program. They're going to be watching legislation and rating it in terms of openness. Is that something we start with Senator Knutson on this one, something that your caucus would support?
Well, you know, grandma is a huge issue, and we're still, to my knowledge, responding to the requests on redistricting that have come forth, and we've tried to address each of those as they have come, and so I don't know from a legislative perspective if there's any legislation being proposed on the Senate side. There may be. I'm just not aware of it.
Just your general comments, Senator Romero, on the aftermath of the whole grandma thing from last year.
Right. Well, I guess what I would say is, you know, I have appreciated the public's engagement in this process. It really was nice to see the collective community coming together and saying we don't like what was proposed and what was ultimately passed. So I think that's important for the public to have it say. You know, I'm going to run a bill this year that doesn't make it an exception any longer for caucus meetings to the Open Public Meeting Act. Basically, we ask our local governments to conduct their business in public. They have to keep a record. They have to be open to the public's review. And I think that's probably good policy and procedure up here at the legislature. I'll also note that, you know, I think it's important for us as legislators to remember the time when we're not here more than the time we are here. We're only here in custodial positions for these offices we hold for a few years. And then we're back to the general public. And I, as a member of the general public, want information. I want to know what's going on with my government. And so as open and transparent as it can be and as I can help make it, I'm going to be an advocate for.
I want to bring up a topic I brought up with previous panel, the representatives, that is the problems that have appeared in the Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control. Our liquor laws, start with you, Senator Knutson. What do you think ought to be done? There's several proposals out there. What do you think ought to be done?
Well, I think Senator Valentine is working on some legislation. In fact, I know he is, to make some changes in the current structure of the alcohol beverage control program. You know, I think that enforcement is the real role of the department. And when they have gotten into the marketing aspects is where most of the problems seem to lie. And I would hope that that's where the focus is now made, is on the enforcement side of it. I think over the past several years, the legislature has tried to respond to the what the needs of the community are in this regard. And if we compare our liquor laws with any number of states, we have the reputation of being very restrictive. But I think we have made some major changes that put us in line with a great number of states these days. As far as continuing to modify and change alcohol law, I suspect that will always be the case. But I think we've made some good strides forward. I look forward to what Senator Valentine is going to be proposing. I've heard that it has some good aspects to it. So I think this law, this issue will be with us for quite some time.
Senator Morrow, this whole issue may be starting with, at least to your understanding, of what Senator Valentine is going to propose.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have any knowledge of what Senator Valentine is going to propose, and I think, you know, that's part of the problem, by the way, I want to just add. So I know there's an effort to kind of consolidate bills and sponsorship behind Senator Valentine. I can tell you that sometimes that's a little frustrating and a little disappointing because there are other ideas that others want to bring forward that need a voice. And so I can tell you I'm going to be a voice for some of those contrary ideas. I think we actually went too far last session. And this is where I was getting at. I had understood last session that there was actually consensus behind Senator Valentine's bill. Well, it wasn't until after the legislative session I had a lot of members from the hospitality industry, from the tourism industry, and from the community say, you know, we really didn't see a problem with the ability of having alcohol present in some of our restaurants. In fact, that's the way a lot of national chains are. So we're losing out on some of that. So the Zion Curtain, so-called, has been a problem. I can tell you that not having the ability to offer drink specials has been a problem. So, again, these are things we just implemented last year. We have one of the lowest DUI rates in the nation, and I'm not sure that we really needed all of those modifications. And so I guess what I would say is, you know, some of what we do is in the eye of the beholder. I think we're a pretty responsible community. I think we look after each other pretty well. I know the bars don't want to serve to underage drinkers or to excess. And so I think that we probably need to make some modifications, and there need to be more voices in this discussion than just Senator Valentine's.
Hmm. I'd like to have each of you respond to an interesting side issue that's related to this. The Utah Hospitality Association has filed a federal lawsuit, and recently they're trying to add into that lawsuit allegation or in order to stop the LDS Church from influencing lawmakers, as they see it, undue influence. Maybe start with you, Senator Romero. Do you see an undue influence from the Mormon Church in this lawmaking?
Well, look, we clearly live in a state that has a majority religion, and I think that they certainly have their voice heard on Capitol Hill. Sometimes it's officially, and sometimes it's unofficially. But I'll also say, look, this, they are a community participant, just as the Catholic Church is, just as any other religious organization is. And so, you know, them coming to the issue with their concerns, to me, is absolutely appropriate. You know, they have a right to be heard. They have a right to interject in the conversation. I would hope, however, that their voice is just one of many that's considered in alcohol policy. Obviously, alcohol can be a tremendous economic driver. It can be a social driver. It can be a perception driver, how we're perceived outside the state of Utah. And so I think there are a lot of influences that we need to be paying attention to as lawmakers, but I certainly think the LDS Church has a role and a place in that conversation.
Senator Knudsen, I'd like to get your viewpoint on this. I'm sure all lawmakers hear this, and this is now it's come to at least the Utah Hospitality Association is trying to take this to court. They bring up the domination clause in the Utah Constitution, but just the general question, is there an inappropriate undue influence from the LDS Church on this or other issues?
Not in my observation or experience. Certainly I've been contacted at different times by folks who represent the church here on Capitol Hill. It's always been a very cordial relationship in terms of them not being aggressive in terms of what they feel, and I've appreciated that. I would be surprised if they didn't have strong feelings regarding the sale and use of alcohol. But they recognize the rights of individuals to make those choices themselves, whether they are going to use alcohol or not. But they have concerns for the youth of our state, and I think that is one of the main issues that drives their interest.
Finally, issues of health care, Medicaid, social services. Start with you, Senator Romero. I spoke with, for example, Judy Hillman with Utah Health Policy Project recently. What are her priorities? And she's from her group. She's looking to continue a transformation, as she calls it, in Medicaid, some reform there. She also and Glenn Bailey from Crossroads Urban Center are hoping to get more dental care for people on Medicaid. Is there going to be enough money in the budget to do some of this reforming?
I hope so, I will say. You know, I had the opportunity of serving on the Health and Human Services Subcommittee, and it is a very tough committee because you really do see people who are dependent and really need assistance, whether that be respite care or whether that be, you know, just fundamental assistance. And so we've got to look after those in most need because that's what makes us a great community. And so I do hope we have additional resources for those.
Senator Knudsen, just this general area, social services, Medicaid, health care, do you see that we'll have enough money to take some strides here?
Well, we're going to have to come up with enough money to meet the requirements of the federal government, and I suspect that will be the case. As far as the dental issue that was brought up, I am a dentist, and I can relate to the concerns of the dental community. Dentistry has always been a stepchild of medicine in that it's been very difficult to go on par with the medical community in terms of funding and so forth. But I believe that's changing nationwide. The knowledge of the relationship of good health and dental care is more and more discussed. Having been a dentist now for over 40 years, I can tell you that people who generally have good dental care have good overall health. And we see that people with poor dental care also have poor health. And there's many factors, income, mode of living, a lot of different things that play into this. But it is important to fund dental care for the most needy, and I've always been a strong advocate of that. I was the chief sponsor of the Children's Health Plan a number of years ago, and I support the funding for the dental aspects of that. There is, though, many adults whose lives would be improved if they could have access to dental care. And I certainly support coming up with money to improve that. We'll never be able to fully fund it because the needs are so great and the dollars are so few. But every step forward we make is important.
Very good. We'll leave it there for this segment. So we've been talking with Senator Ross Romero, Senate Minority Leader. Thanks so much for coming back in.
Absolutely.
And Senator Pete Knudsen, Senate Assistant Majority Whip. Thanks so much.
Thank you again.
Back to Access Utah. After break, we're going to bring in Governor Gary Herbert and talk about his priorities coming up with this legislative session. By the way, we'll be carrying the State of the State address live on UPR. That's Wednesday night at 6:30. In this break, we're going to be hearing from Judy Hillman, Executive Director of the Utah Health Policy Project. Here's her priorities next.
I think for a lot of what we're working on up on the Hill, we're kind of looking at through this lens of what's called accountable care. Right now, the Utah Medicaid program, that's the health program serving the poor, right now that program is undergoing massive transformation where we want to start paying providers differently. We want to pay them more if they manage chronic conditions and coordinate care well and keep their patients out of the emergency room. And we don't want to just pay them more, you know, for more tests and more procedures. And so that's the transformation that Utah is only just beginning. And what we're trying to do in this session is to really think about making financing decisions about what to restore or you know, any kind of policy changes that will complement those goals. Because we do think that Medicaid, we need to pay for Medicaid in a smarter way and not just continue paying for all the waste, but rather pay for value, for better care for patients. So this year we are going to try to restore the dental services in Medicaid, but we recognize that it's a difficult year for that because we're not really paying providers well to serve the dental needs. So we're doing a kind of Oral Health Improvement Act. That's one big initiative for us. We're also working on a transparency around hospital-acquired infections, and we would like to see more transparency and stronger measures around really bringing the public eye on what's going on in hospitals and helping the public choose hospitals based on their safety record.
Are there any specific pieces of legislation that you're focused on at this point? It's early, of course.
Yes. Well, there is a sort of a large bill for the health reform, the state health reform. You're going into year four, I guess, and there's a bill being sponsored by Representative Jim Dunnigan, who is a broker. And that bill will renew the health reform task force. One of the things that we're trying to get that task force to do or working on in the bill is to really maximize Utah's premium subsidy program called Utah Premium Partnership. It turns out that we're not really using that program to its fullest potential. And so what's happening is that, you know, you may be offered coverage in the workplace, but you may not be able to take it up because you can't afford your part of the premium. Well, Utah Premium Partnership is out there. And so what we want to do is raise the eligibility for level for the adults to the same level as their children, because children right now are eligible at 200% of poverty, adults only at 150% of poverty. So what we're trying to do is to bring them together so there is seamless coverage for the entire family. And the beauty of using the premium subsidies is that you can use the premium subsidies to get folks into the private market, which is where I think a lot of Utahns and certainly Utah leaders would like people to get their insurance coverage.
Very good. We'll be, I'm sure, covering many of these issues as the legislative session goes along. And we've been talking with Judy Hillman, Executive Director of Utah Health Policy Project. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Support for legislative coverage comes from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're coming to you live from the state capitol. It's the opening day of the 2012 legislative session. A lot of excitement. Lawmakers are gathering, and we're joined now by Governor Gary Herbert. Thanks so much for taking time.
Thank you, Tom. It's an honor to be with you.
So the issues that have been put at the top of the list by both the Republicans and Democrats that I've been talking to, education and economic development, will those be at the top of your list?
Absolutely. They're joined at the hip. You cannot have long-term sustained economic development if you don't have a skilled, educated labor force. And so I think everybody's starting to realize that we're going to accelerate and expand our economic opportunity. We need to make sure we have a great educational environment here for the rising generation and the labor force that's going to go out there and do the work.
You have, in your budget, allocated some $40 million. I heard from Representative Dee from the House side that they'd like to even go beyond that.
We have $40 million initially is just for the growth. We have about 11,500 to 12,500 students. New students will be coming in to grades K through 12 this next year. So it's about a 2.4% growth rate, which is pretty robust when you think about it, certainly compared to the rest of the country. It's part of our high birth rate, larger family sizes we have here in Utah, and the unique challenge we have of funding. So that $40 million will go just to maintain our classroom sizes and fund the growth, which is a good step in the right direction. But there's a total of $111 million in my budget for public education funding, which will include not only the growth, but it'll include some new programs to help use new technology to better test our students and their progress to get them college ready, some adaptive testing with technology, early intervention for kids at risk to see if we can't make sure that we have reading proficiency by the end of third grade, math proficiency by the end of sixth grade, believing if we don't do that, that they will always be behind, always trying to play catch-up and not be college-ready. And it goes part of our goal to have, by 2020, two-thirds of our adult population to have either some kind of post-high school certification or degree. And my belief is that if we don't do that by 2020, our economy will underperform. So that's the motivation, and I think the legislature understands that and is going to embrace that, and so I feel like we're going to have a successful session when it comes to public education funding.
Just briefly, I want to talk about the whole area of health care, Medicaid. I know the Medicaid for many states eats up a big portion of the budget. What do we do there?
Well, Medicaid really is what we call the budget buster. And all states are faced with a significant challenge with this mandate we call Medicaid. And it's not a Republican-Democrat issue. It's a governor budget issue. And, for example, we'll have about $400 million of new money, $280 of it ongoing. The rest will be one time. But we have an ongoing need in Medicaid now of about $160 million this year just to meet the mandate that comes out of the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act. And that's a lot of money, you know, to take out of your finite funds, even though it's we're growing. But to take that big of an amount out of it is really troublesome. And so we've got to find better ways, more efficient ways to address Medicaid. We're doing quite well in Utah if they'll let us do our own thing. I've been back and have testified before Congress that we can do more with less. Take away the strings. Don't give us such a tight bottleneck where we can't have ingenuity and creativity to take place. And they're giving us some relief there, but we've got a long ways to go. I'll just give your listeners one example. We wanted to go paperless. You know, it's a high-tech society now. And send information to recipients of Medicaid by email. And the federal government ended up saying, no, the law requires paper, and we're not going to let you do it. And the ironic thing is that they sent us the denial by email. It actually required me to talk to President Obama personally to get that waiver, and that waiver is going to save us about $6.3 million in this state. So those are the kind of things we're doing to find more innovation, creativity, and get better bang for the taxpayers' dollars and still balance the budget.
We'll have to leave it there. Of course, we'll hear a lot more about some of these issues in the State of the State address. That's Wednesday night at 6:30. We'll be carrying it live on our station, Utah Public Radio, so certainly tune in.
Thank you. We'll be honored to have you there. Thank you very much.
Governor Gary Herbert, thanks so much.
You bet.
Coming in.
Thank you.
First day of the legislative session. We've been covering this with legislators and with Governor Gary Herbert. And you can certainly comment on these issues. We'd love to have your comments as we cover the legislature through the next 45 days on Access Utah and other programs. Just go to upr.org and email us. It's upr.org. Thanks for listening.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.
Support for coverage of the Utah Legislature comes from USU's Department of Journalism and Communication, dedicated to free expression and mutual understanding in the information age, and covering breaking Cache Valley news at hardnewscafe.usu.edu.